Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello and welcome once again to the Learning English programs on VOA. We come to you each day with interesting stories from around the world. Today we will begin with a story about symbolism here in the United States. The Confederate battle flag was one of the symbols of Southern slaveholding states that withdrew from this country in 1861. The Confederacy lost its war for independence 4 years later. But the battle flag still flies across some areas of the South. Now, after the June 17th shootings in a South Carolina church, some state leaders say the flag has become an unwelcome symbol of hate. Kelly Jean Kelly reports.
The governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, has called on state lawmakers to remove the Confederate battle flag from the state capitol. She says, "The flag is an important part of the state's history, but it is not a symbol of the state's future."
"We are here in a moment of unity in our state, without ill will, to say it's time to move the flag from the capitol grounds."
The debate about the flag has grown stronger since a deadly shooting on June 17th. 9 members of an African-American church in Charleston, South Carolina, were shot and killed. The suspected killer is a 21-year-old white man. Dylan Roof reportedly accepted the flag as a symbol of white supremacy, the belief that white people are better than all others, especially black people. Photographs of Mr. Roof show him waving a Confederate battle flag and burning a U.S. flag. The Confederate battle flag was one of the symbols of the Confederate States of America, or the Confederacy. The Confederacy was a group of Southern slaveholding states that left the U.S. in 1861. The Confederacy lost the War for Independence and rejoined the U.S. 4 years later. In 1961, South Carolina raised the Confederate battle flag over the State House to recognize the 100-year anniversary of the beginning of the Civil War. After protest from civil rights activists in 2000, the flag was moved to a monument for Confederate soldiers on the State House lawn. Some states, including Virginia, offer automobile license plates with images of the battle flag. But this month, the United States Supreme Court announced that states are permitted to limit license plate designs. Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe says he is taking measures to remove the battle flag image from license plates made by the state. In the southern state of Mississippi, the official state flag includes parts of the Confederate battle flag. In 2001, Mississippi residents voted to keep the Confederate symbol in their flag. But this week, one of the top lawmakers has joined other protesters in calling for changes to the state flag. To some, the Confederate battle flag represents an honorable part of Southern history. South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley noted that many people in the state link the flag to traditions of history, heritage, and ancestry. To others, the Confederate battle flag represents slavery and a long history of racism. Even after the Civil War effectively ended slavery, many U.S. policies permitted the South to continue to separate white and black people. Images of the Confederate battle flag became popular in the mid-20th century to challenge efforts to improve civil rights laws for African Americans. Mitch McConnell is the Senate Majority Leader. He says the battle flag is a painful reminder of racial oppression. Former Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney called the flag a symbol of racial hatred. His statement put pressure on Republican presidential candidates to discuss the subject of race in their campaigns. President Barack Obama has said the Confederate battle flag belongs in a museum. But, he says, states have the right to decide how to deal with the issue. No matter what state lawmakers decide, Americans will still be free to display the flag on their private property. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. Egyptian officials are making plans to open a newly expanded Suez Canal on August 6th. Officials say the new canal will be more than double the waterway's earnings over the next 10 years. But some experts say the project alone will not be able to turn around Egypt's economy. Admiral Mohab Mohammed Hussein Mamish heads the Suez Canal Authority. He says the project will cut in half the amount of time it takes to travel through the Suez Canal. He says this time savings will lower costs for shippers. The expansion of the current canal means two ships will be able to sail by each other. Now there is only enough room for one ship to pass through the waterway. The Suez Canal connects Europe and Asia. The canal earned $5.5 billion in income for Egypt last year. Admiral Mamish says less than 10 years from now, the expanded canal will earn $13 billion a year. Professor Andrew Lambert teaches naval history at King's College in London. He says the success of the canal will depend largely on the health of the world's shipping industry. He says that is something Egypt cannot control. And he says even if the expanded canal is successful, he does not think it will improve the lives of average Egyptians. People in Egypt are facing rising poverty rates and prices. The economy is slowly recovering from recent financial and political unrest.
Egypt is a large, complex country with a very big population. It's highly unlikely it's going to be able to live off the kinds of incomes it will get even from two canals. The costs of governing Egypt are very large. There's major debt problems.
But officials say the economy is growing, and they say the canal is just one project that will both increase foreign investment in Egypt and create income for the country. You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. The United States Congress has given President Barack Obama a powerful tool to get trade deals approved. Congress approved what is called fast-track authority to help Mr. Obama and future presidents negotiate trade agreements. The expanded powers are designed to protect proposed agreements from congressional changes. Wednesday night, the Senate voted on Trade Promotion Authority, or TPA. Colorado Senator Cory Gardner spoke on the Senate floor.
Is any member wishing to change their vote? On this vote, the yeas are 60, the nays are 38. The motion to concur in the House amendment to the Senate amendment to H.R. 2146 is agreed to.
The bill's approval increases chances for two of the biggest trade deals in U.S. history. Under TPA, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership would be approved with simple majority votes in Congress. Lawmakers could not amend the agreements. The House of Representatives has already approved the TPA bill. President Obama is expected to sign it into law. 2 weeks ago, TPA's supporters feared the bill would not get congressional approval. House members blocked trade legislation by voting down a retraining bill for American workers displaced by foreign competition. House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi announced on Wednesday she would vote for the measure. She had led House Democrats in opposing it earlier this month. She spoke after the Senate was prepared to support the retraining legislation. The sudden increase in support for free trade saddened its opponents, like independent Senator Bernie Sanders. "It's a great day for the big money interests, not a great day for working families," he said. Mr. Sanders added, "This trade agreement will continue the policies that have cost us millions of decent-paying jobs." Environmental groups and labor unions also oppose fast-track authority. Jim Hoffa heads the Teamsters Union, which represents American truck drivers. He said that history shows it makes no sense to give a quick up or down vote to bad trade deals like the TPP that will only ship jobs overseas and lower wages in the U.S. The trade battle produced rare political alliances in Washington. On this issue, President Obama has had strong support from Republican congressional leaders. Yet the Republican leaders work against the president's proposals on almost every other issue. TPA sharply divided Democratic lawmakers. They were the targets of serious lobbying efforts from activists on both sides. And that's the Economics Report. I'm Mario Ritter.
This is Rich Kleinfeld.
And this is Doug Johnson with The Making of a Nation, a VOA special English program about the history of the United States. Today, we tell about the campaign for president in 1980 and the election of President Ronald Reagan.
The President of the United States in 1980 was Jimmy Carter, a Democrat. The months before Election Day were difficult for him. Many Americans blamed Carter for high inflation, high unemployment, and the low value of the United States dollar. Many blamed him for not gaining the release of American hostages in Iran. About a year earlier, Muslim extremists had taken the Americans prisoner after seizing the United States Embassy in Tehran. President Carter asked all Americans to support his administration during the crisis. As months went by, however, he made no progress in bringing the hostages home. The Iranians rejected negotiations for their release. Sometimes they did not communicate with the Carter administration at all. The president appeared powerless.
Carter's political weakness led another Democrat to compete for the party's presidential nomination. It was Edward Kennedy, brother of former President John Kennedy. He was a powerful senator from Massachusetts. Carter was renominated. So was his vice president, Walter Mondale. Kennedy did not support them very strongly, so the Democratic Party was divided for the general election. The Republican Party, however, was united behind a strong candidate. That was Ronald Reagan, a former actor and former governor of California. Reagan's vice presidential candidate was George Bush. Bush had served in Congress and as head of the Central Intelligence Agency. He had represented the United States in China and at the United Nations.
The troubles of the Carter administration caused many Americans to feel that their country was no longer strong. Ronald Reagan promised to make it strong again. Several weeks before the election, Carter and Reagan debated each other on television. Some observers said Carter seemed angry and defensive. They said Reagan seemed calm and thoughtful. On Election Day, voters gave Reagan a huge victory. He won by more than 8 million popular votes. Republicans called it the Reagan Revolution.
On Inauguration Day, the new president spoke about the goals of his administration. A major goal was to reduce the size of the federal government. Reagan and other conservatives believed that the nation's economy was suffering because of high taxes and unnecessary laws. In this crisis, he said, government was not the solution to the problem. Government was the problem. He urged Americans to join him in what he called a new beginning, and he expressed hope that the people would work with him.
The economic ills we suffer have come upon us over several decades. They will not go away in days, weeks, or months, but they will go away. They will go away because we, as Americans, have the capacity now, as we've had in the past, to do whatever needs to be done to preserve this last and greatest bastion of freedom.
Ronald Reagan was born in 1911 in the little town of Tampico, Illinois. He was a good student and a good athlete. During the summer, he worked as a lifeguard at a local swimming area. One summer, he saved the lives of 27 people. He studied economics and sociology at Eureka College, a small school in Illinois. At the college, he saw a theater production. When it was over, he said, "More than anything in the world, I wanted to speak the actor's words."
Reagan did not have enough money to go to New York or Hollywood to be an actor. Instead, he tried to get a job as a sports announcer on radio. To show his abilities, he made a recording of an American football game in which he announced all the plays. There really was no game, however. He had invented all the action. A radio station in the small city of Davenport, Iowa, was pleased with his creativity. He got the job.
Later, he worked at a radio station in Des Moines, Iowa. And then he moved to the big city of Chicago, Illinois. There, he announced the action of baseball games. When the team went to California to play, Reagan went too. This gave him a chance to take a screen test to become a movie actor. The Warner Brothers Motion Pictures Company liked the friendly, handsome young man and offered him a job.
Before long, Ronald Reagan was a Hollywood star. He appeared in many movies. These included The Newt Rockne Story, Bedtime for Bonzo, and King's Row. They were not the very best motion pictures made in Hollywood, but they were popular. During one movie, he met actress Nancy Davis. They married after he was divorced from his first wife. Reagan became deeply interested in politics during his years in Hollywood. He was a liberal, but became increasingly conservative. He served 6 times as president of a union of movie actors. He was noted for his opposition to anyone in the movie industry who supported communism.
By the early 1950s, Reagan had stopped appearing in movies. Instead, he appeared on television. He made advertisements and also presented a series of dramatic shows. By 1960, he was making speeches for conservative Republican candidates. In 1966, he became a candidate himself. He ran for governor of California. The Democrats did not think he was a serious candidate. They told jokes about some of his movies. They made a mistake. When the voting was over, Reagan had won by almost 1 million votes. As governor, Reagan was praised for reducing the state's huge debt. However, he was criticized for raising taxes. He also was criticized for his severe policies for controlling unrest at the state's colleges. Yet he won re-election in 1970.
Reagan campaigned for the Republican nomination for president in 1976. he almost defeated President Gerald Ford for the nomination. One of the party's older senators spoke with Reagan after the convention. He said, "Son, you will be president someday. This just was not your year." 4 years later, with President Jimmy Carter in trouble, Reagan's day had arrived.
Ronald Reagan was sworn in as America's 40th president on January 20th, 1981. For many Americans, the day turned out even happier than expected. Iran finally announced that it would free the hostages in Tehran. One of President Reagan's earliest proposals made many Americans happy, too. He began to work to get Congress to reduce taxes. He also began a weekly series of radio broadcasts. In these programs, he commented on developments in American life and political policy. The broadcasts were similar to those made by President Franklin Roosevelt during the 1930s. Some people started to call Reagan the great communicator.
2 months after Reagan took office, something unexpected and terrible happened. The president was leaving a meeting at a hotel in Washington. A gunman began to fire. A man guarding the president fell to the ground. So did the president's press assistant. Both were seriously wounded. Other guards quickly helped Reagan into his car. At first, observers did not think the president had been hit, but he had. There was a bullet in his left lung close to his heart. Doctors removed the bullet. Reagan fought courageously to get well, and he did. We will continue the story of President Ronald Reagan next week.
This program of The Making of a Nation was written by Jerry Watson and produced by Paul Thompson. This is Rich Kleinfeld.
And this is Doug Johnson. Join us again next week for another VOA Special English program about the history of the United States.